And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and it's my pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Highschool, the author of What Can I Bring? Southern Food for Any Occasion Life Serves Up, published by Oxmoor House. Elizabeth was born and raised in the Mississippi Delta and has combined her recipes with beautiful location photos and stories about the origin of each dish. So, no matter the occasion, you have the perfect recipe for success. She owns a vegetable business, a catering company, has her own line of homegrown gourmet pickles, jellies, jams, salsas, and popular Bloody Mary mix. She's also the mother of three girls. She's a Today Show food contributor and regular on Sirius XM Radio. Elizabeth, you've got your fingers in so many different pies. You've got your catering company, you've got the farm, plus you've got girls to take care of. How do you get it all done, and how did you get into this cooking passion thing?
So the first question, I have a lot of help. I could not do this without my husband, who is incredibly supportive, because there are times that I'm gone, you know, for days on end and three girls at home. It's a tremendous amount of work, you know, but he's incredibly supportive. And then a great staff at the catering company and great staff at the farm. So, I mean, we're just really, really blessed. Very, very blessed. You know, it's funny. My mother was very good friends with Karen Carrier. We lived in Memphis when I was growing up, and she designed or helped design some of her restaurants. And so they were very, very good friends. And so in high school, I started working at another roadside attraction, just on the weekends, waiting tables, you know, and doing all of that. Not waiting tables, but catering parties. So then when I went to college, I would come home on the holidays and weekends, and I would go back to cater with Karen. And so when I finished school and was, you know, looking for my real job, I ended up finding my real husband and didn't ever really find a real job. So I started having children and had my first child, and then started my own business that was called Instead of Flowers. And so basically, Instead of Flowers, call us and we would bring, you know, meals to someone that maybe had a baby, or if someone had died, or if somebody was moving. That was about 20 years ago. And then that morphed into catering almost immediately.
You've referred to taking something, and that's what this book is all about.
It's so crazy. This is a column in Southern Living's magazine, What Can I Bring? And it's a monthly column. And so Sid Evans and I were working on a few other projects. He's the editor of Southern Living. And he said, you know, Elizabeth, I really want to do something else with you. We've done some webisodes. We've done some Facebook Live. But have you thought about writing a book? And I said, you know, I have. I said, but honestly, I don't have time to find an agent. I don't have time to find a publisher. It just seemed like an insurmountable task. Even though my prayer had been right before Sid came to me, it was that, you know, I wanted a book, but it had to be really, really easy. I wanted to write a book, but it needed to be simple. I wanted a book, but it had, like, you know, all of these stipulations. He said, well, if you write a book with us, you don't have to have anything. Southern Living will handle everything for you. And so I said, well, tell me about this concept. And so Catherine Cobb, my editor, and I went to lunch, and she started explaining the concept. And I started laughing, and I said, you know, I could write that book with my eyes closed. I said, that was my first business. You know, Jency Hunt and I, we were together, and we started this business together, and that's what it was. Of course, our husbands called it Instead of a Job, because they both wanted us to go get jobs, you know, real jobs. And so instead of that, we came up with our own company just so that we could hang out and have fun. But a lot of these were the recipes that we used 20 years ago, you know, and if they weren't those recipes from the Instead of Flowers business, they're recipes that my mother took to people when they were sick, or, you know, for the Rotary Club. The consomme rice in here is the thing that put her on the map on the Rotary Club circuit. I mean, when all of the members realized that it was Mama's week to cook that week, I mean, there were lines out the door. So I literally, I mean, I don't want to say I wrote this with my eyes closed, because it sounds like I didn't work very hard, but it was not a stretch, I have to say that.
Because most of the recipes you already had, the stories that are beautiful that go along with the photographs, was that the format that they suggested for you? Is that what you had in mind initially when you thought about writing a book, that it would include the recipes as well as the stories?
Well, you know, it's funny, because it's hard for me to write a recipe without telling people. I'm a talker, if you didn't notice. If you hadn't gathered that, I'm a bit of a talker. And so it was hard for me just to write a recipe, but then not tell them, you know, the importance of this recipe, or what happened that was funny maybe while I was doing this recipe, you know, all of those sort of backstories. And so it's not that they even really asked me for it. I just started sending it. And they were pleased. And it's funny, there are a lot of stories that didn't even make it in here. And that's neither here nor there. The fact is that it was just so much fun to write and to write and to write. I'd never really sat down and written anything. I mean, when my English teacher finds out that I have a book, she's going to have a heart attack. I mean, I could not spell pit if you spotted me, the P and the T. I mean, it was horrific. And don't ask me about an action verb or any of those things. It's terrible. But thank goodness I had Catherine Cobb, which is an incredible editor. So she made me look much, much smarter than I am. But no, the format just sort of evolved from just writing it.
Well, I really like the way that it's laid out, though, because it's almost a coffee table book.
Oh,
as well
thank you.
As, you know, the recipes. It's a wonderful cookbook.
And thank you.
I have used it. I was at the beach last week.
Which I was so excited to hear.
We made the Twinkie cake.
Oh, stop it.
It was, you know, just a hit, and we ate it almost all week. We have made the mimosas.
Oh,
we've also
so
made the hot toddies.
Oh,
we've
I
made
love it.
The beef stew.
That so makes my day.
The thing that I like is they're not real complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Did you design it that way?
I did. Well, you know, the thing is that when someone dies or has a baby, or if you have a friend that's sick, they're not going to give you 3 weeks' notice on that. You know, you can't pencil it into your schedule. And so you need a recipe that, number one, you can get all the ingredients right there. And, you know, that's not difficult to make. Because I think what happens is if we're faced with a recipe that is incredibly difficult, we don't have a lot of time anyway, then the tendency is just to go to the Walmart and pick up some pound cake that's been shoved in a plastic clamshell for God knows how long. You know, I would much rather you take a shortcut on one of my recipes, you know, that maybe uses on the chicken pot pie. You know, you don't have to use that pie crust. You can go and buy a pie crust, and I talk about that in there. I would rather you make these recipes and take a shortcut than not make them at all. Because honestly, the gift that you're giving, it's your time. I mean, of course, everybody's going to enjoy that chicken pot pie. But the thing that means the most is that you stopped your world, you know, even if it was just for an hour, for someone else. You took time that is so precious. Just seems like everybody's running in 1,000 different directions. And you gave that time. And it is the most memorable thing that we can do. So, yes, these recipes are very, very simple. I mean, there is no hummingbird tongue on toast recipes in here. I mean, you are not going to find ingredients that you have to, you know, order from Amazon and have overnighted. I can get all of these ingredients at the Piggly Wiggly in Rosedale, Mississippi, which means you can get them anywhere on the planet.
You say that to be a good cook, you have to practice. Do you think people don't practice because it does seem so complicated when you look at a lot of books?
You know, I absolutely believe that. And, you know, we've gotten so inundated. I love Pinterest just as much as the next person. I love Instagram and all of these food stories and the Food Network and all of that. I think it's wonderful. But I think it has set the bar so high for such perfection. You know, and I'll explain to people that want me to recreate a recipe or a drink that maybe they've seen on Pinterest. And I'll say, you know, they probably spent all day setting up that one shot of that one glass with that one ice cube and that one piece of lavender or whatever it was. I think we are intimidated. And I also think that's why we don't have friends to our homes as much anymore. Because you see these beautiful parties where every single pillow is fluffed perfectly and, you know, not one thing is out of place. And it just is turned into this sort of Martha Stewart world. And it doesn't have to be. You know, when you're inviting someone over, they're just grateful to have been invited. You know, they're just grateful that you were thought of, that they, you know, that someone thought of you. They're not there to judge how many dust bunnies you have under your couch. They are there to enjoy you. And so that's one of my hopes with the book, is that people will feel like they can entertain more. And also, you know, I want them to know how to be a great guest, and that is bringing something. And if it can be something that is made, that you made yourself, it makes it that much better.
Well, I agree with you there, because I'd much rather have a bad homemade potato salad than one that comes, you know, from the grocery store.
You are right.
Because, you know, people have put their heart and their time into it. Like you say, I mean, that's the most memorable thing about it, is not how many dust bunnies or what the tablescape looked like. And that's another thing about your book. The tablescapes are not complicated.
Mm-mm.
They don't feature a lot of fancy things. I mean, it's very simple things, but it's so cool.
Oh,
you know, to
you.
Be able to see that. I'm glad you included those.
Yes, we had a great stylist from Birmingham that just did an amazing job. She's just really, really great. And then a lot of the recipes were photographed in the Southern Living Studios, so we knew those were going to be a home run. They're the best in the business. So, but it's still, it's very reminiscent of me. It's very reminiscent of what I would do and what I do on a daily basis.
Well, how did you decide what chapters to include, like bringing baby home?
That was hard. That was really hard because I have so many ideas about it and so many occasions that we couldn't do as many chapters as I wanted. And so Catherine, my editor, she would say, you know, Elizabeth, save that for the next book. So I did feel okay about not taking all of them. Number one, I wanted to include some chapters that people may not have thought of, you know, an excuse to bring something to someone. The Boys Will Be Boys chapter is a prime example of that. Or road trip roadies. I mean, I love going on a road trip. I love driving. You know, and it's just such a huge excuse to eat, you know, while you're in the car. And it's so much fun to pack all of that together and, you know, and to have a fun cooler and just hit the road. So that, and then also with Boys Will Be Boys, my husband is a huge hunter. Anyway, when we had three babies that were all under the age of five, you know, I would just cry and cry and cry when he would leave to go hunting. I mean, it just killed me. I would just lay in front of the door and beg him not to leave. Anyway, now that they're older, you know, I can't wait for him to go. I mean, I am packing his bags. I mean, what can I do to make this go faster? You know, because it's so much fun to have the remote control all to yourself and not to have to share the TV and not to have to cook supper. And it's like I'm on vacation too. So I've learned that if I'll send great food with him for all of his buddies at the duck camp, then he definitely gets an invitation back as well. So it's twofold on that one.
Kind of giving yourself insurance for the next trip.
Exactly, exactly. And then I thought of chapters and reasons and times that are every day getting invited for dinner with friends. You know, we've always got someone that may be hurting or that's sick that we need to take care of. You know, there's always a potluck to bring something to. And so those were the other ones, the ones that I'm constantly, you know, or not constantly, but over and over, I'm taking things for.
Mm-hmm. What is your favorite recipe in the book? Is there one that you kind of hesitated to share because it's one of your favorites and it's your dish?
No, okay, so that's so funny. It's hard for me to pick out one recipe just because it's like my children. That's how close these recipes are. I mean, they really are all very, very special to me. It depends on my mood. You know, so much of what I cook is, much of what I cook is mood dependent and season dependent. So you were asking about what my favorite recipe is. And
did you hesitate to give any of them up?
Oh, okay. No, I didn't. Isn't that funny? There were some that if I was embarrassed, it was because, you know, maybe it was something that was incredibly simple. And, you know, somebody may ask me for the recipe or, you know, I never really let on, you know, how easy something is. And so I didn't want them to think, you know, oh, my Lord, well, that's all she did to put into that. Well, really, that was all it was, you know. And so that would be the only thing that I, you know, kind of hesitated about when I wrote the chocolate chip bundt cake. I mean, you know, really, it's Jell-O instant pudding and it's Duncan Hines and it's not things that I'm real proud of. But the thing about it is that is my funeral bundt cake. Every time someone dies, that's what I take. You know, and it's funny, as Sarah Burden, who works with me and is the reason that I'm able to do all of the things that I can do, I texted her the other day and I said something about the cake. Oh, I said, we need to make two of this chocolate chip bundt cake. And she said, oh, good Lord, who died? And, you know, it's
so
just,
it is signature.
The funeral cake, that and tomato aspic. But anyway, so yeah, so that would be the only reason that I would be a little hesitant about putting in a recipe is because sometimes the secrets are Jell-O instant pudding or Cool Whip or a few other things.
Well, I know you talked about your great grandmother who gave a recipe for the church cookbook.
Yes.
But didn't necessarily put everything in there.
Yes. And she was one of the editors of the book. And so literally, I mean, it's almost like every other page was my great grandmother's recipes, which just killed me because she was so bossy. And you can tell from this book from that book, it says a lot about who she was, which was, you know, she felt like everything that she did was better than anybody else's and that all of her recipes needed to be put in. I mean, it was literally every other page was Mrs. Lawrence Paxton. And so I was so excited when my husband and I first started dating. His mother was coming in town from Dallas, Barbara Mills. Oh, my Lord, I was so in love with Luke, and I was just dying to impress his mother. And so she came to dinner, and so I thought, well, I'm going to make great-grandmother's corn souffle out of the Gourmet of the Delta. I know it'll be perfect. So I made it, and I cooked it, and I cooked it, and I cooked it, and I cooked it, and it never puffed up. It was like soup. It was the most ridiculous thing that I have ever done. And I called my grandmother the next day, and I said, I don't understand. I said, I did every single thing that the recipe said. And she said, well, where did you get the recipe? I said, it was in Gourmet of the Delta. She said, oh, Lord, Elizabeth, don't ever use any recipe that was printed about your grandmother in that book, because she never wanted anybody to be able to make it as well as she did. So she would always leave out a recipe. Is that not hysterical? This is the same great-grandmother that if she made a cake and it didn't turn out properly, instead of throwing it away because she didn't want anybody to know that she had made a mistake, she would go outside, she would dig a hole, and she would bury the damn thing.
That is hilarious.
Can you imagine?
No, I really can't.
I mean, what? It blows my mind that these are the people that I come from, but it is.
And that you're sharing all these secrets.
Exactly. And some of hers, because grandmother has all of the original right recipes. So it's not that any of these are lost. It's just, you know, if you have a Gourmet of the Delta, do not follow, you know, Mrs. Lawrence Paxton's recipes. I'm just giving you forewarning on that one.
Well, and you talk about, apparently you do come from a long line of good cooks.
I do.
Now, my mother said she would rather dig ditches, and honestly, she could do that better than she could cook. So how do you deal with, you know, somebody who's had good cooking experiences versus me, who I have to have the recipe? I mean, mm-hmm. I follow it to a T.
Okay.
My husband cooks off script all the time, like you suggest doing. Mm-hmm. But for me, that's really hard.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Everyone's personalities are so different. And I can tell from teaching cooking classes. I taught cooking classes at Viking Range Corporation for 8 years. And so I got to watch so many hundreds and hundreds of people cook. And their personalities are very much in line with the way that they cook. You know, I mean, if somebody that has to follow the recipe, you know, usually is very type A. Everything needs to be organized. Everything has to stay in. And then, you know, the ones that are not following the recipes, you know, just dumping everything in, not even reading the directions. You know, those are loosey-goosey, just, you know, laid back. And it's so funny to watch people and the way that they cook. But I do have to say that all of these recipes, they're so structured that, you know, it's easy for you to put your own taste in it. So as far as taking something out of it, if you don't like a vegetable that, you know, is in this, take it out. Or if you think, oh, you know, I really would rather substitute red peppers in here instead of the artichoke hearts, whatever. I mean, those little simple things. And I think once you start to do a little bit of experimenting, just tiny, just my taste prefers this, so this is what I'm going to do, then it will slowly, hopefully, kind of unlock that creativity, and maybe you'll feel the inspiration. Or not.
I hope so. I don't know. I really do. You had talked about, though, that you have your bundt cake that you take when mm-hmm. somebody dies. Should a hostess have a signature dish like that?
You know, it's funny. And it's not that you'll pick your signature dish. It's the people that you're bringing it to. They're the ones that are going to start to demand it. If it's something that you bring that everybody loves, then the next time you say, oh, well, what can I bring? They're going to say, oh, bring this. Unless you're like one of my friends who's a horrible cook, and she'll say, well, what can I bring? And they'll say, you can bring the paper plate. And, you know, or you can bring the rolls. Just know that if people tell you you can bring the rolls or the paper plates,
you
have a problem. You don't need to get in the kitchen.
Well, I told you that we made the Twinkie cake last week, mm-hmm. but we had so much trouble finding Twinkies. I didn't realize. We went to 3 different stores to try to find Twinkies. Now, we found banana ones, and we found chocolate ones. But, of course, being me, I wasn't going
to
substitute.
You had to absolutely
have. You made them with any of those other flavors?
I
was just curious.
I haven't. I've only made them with those, but I think that it would be just as wonderful. It's funny. Poor Twinkies. They have gotten such a bad rap. When I bring them in the house, I haven't made this, you know, that much before the book came out. And so I was making it to take to a friend of mine for a party that she was having. And the girls, my girls, just absolutely had a fit when I brought Twinkies in. I mean, you would have thought that I had brought in, you know, pestilence and...
Oh, no.
Oh, they were horrible. They're like, oh, Mama, Twinkies, you got to get those out of our house. And, you know, because everybody has just gotten so... I mean, we do need to worry about our health and everything else, but a Twinkie cake every now and then is not going to hurt anybody.
Well, and that's one of those recipes. We got tickled about the Kraft garlic cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that story a little bit.
I hate to even bring it up because it's such a sad story. There was this product, and it was a garlic cheese roll. And anybody from the Mississippi Delta, or probably Mississippi period, it was sort of that, you know, main ingredient. It was almost like if somebody had taken butter and just said, I'm sorry, we're not going to have butter anymore. So many of these cooks relied on it. It was the base for the garlic cheese grits growing up. I mean, that was it. You started with the garlic cheese roll or dips. Or I mean, it was such an important piece of the puzzle, of the recipe. And then all of a sudden, it just disappeared. It was just gone. Kraft just stopped making it. It kind of came in a little plastic log, and it had two sort of clamp metal ends on it. And really, it was probably very akin to Velveeta. But this was before, you know, Velveeta and processed cheese had come out, and it had a little bit of garlic flavoring to it. So I'm sure now if you took Velveeta, added a little bit of garlic salt to it, you'd probably be pretty close. But anyway, everyone was all up in arms, and I can remember Mama just standing in Rosedale at the Piggly Wiggly, and Mama just in tears about what in the world she was going to do, because she was so famous for her cheese grits, and that was the main ingredient. I mean, women were having full-on come-aparts at the grocery store because of this. But anyway, I don't know, maybe Kraft will bring it back one day. But yes, it was tragic, tragic.
Well, when you find something like that, because I have a lot of my mother's and mother-in-law's and grandmother's cookbooks like you do, but a lot of times they'll refer to things that I don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. How do you decide how to substitute? I mean, obviously, you're very experienced at that, mm-hmm. but when you don't really know what you're going for.
That's incredibly difficult, especially if you don't even recognize the product name, you know, or anything about it. Again, you're just going to have to Google. What did we do before Google? If you know, you know, sort of what it is, whether it's a product that they're using, a lot of times what they would do is they would use a brand name rather than the actual
right.
product, because everybody associated with it. And back then there was only one brand, you know, there wasn't like soup companies now. It was Campbell's soup. That was it. There were no options. Now there are, you know, 800 different soups. And so it's just a matter of trying to match it up, and you have to play with these things. Try to find something that's as similar as you can and then work with it. You know, if it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. You know, at least you tried. I think we have such a fear of failure sometimes that we're scared to try anything, that it might not work. And I know ingredients are expensive and we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, what if it does work? And then you have your grandmother's, whatever, prize pie recipe back.
What do you find is the hardest part of cooking?
I swear it has to be time. And it's hard for me because it's my favorite thing to do. So it's hard for me to relate sometimes, because I do have friends that do not like it at all. They absolutely dread cooking. And I can't imagine that. But I dread math, you know, and I have friends that love to do math. So, you know, to each their own as far as that's concerned. But I think it just takes time, and it does take practice. It's just like riding a bike. It's just like anything else. We were not born knowing how to make a souffle. It's not like breathing. You know, and it takes a little bit of time, but it is so rewarding and unbelievably worth it, not only for you, but for your children and for your friends and for your family. You know, because if you're cooking your own meals, then you're taking care of yourself. You know what you're putting in it. You know where your ingredients are coming from. You know, and that really is the key to being healthy. Twinkie cakes aside.
Well, I know you're a lot luckier than
with
most
a sprinkling
people.
Of Twinkie cakes in there every now and then.
Yeah. But you're really fortunate because you have your own vegetable farm. What about those of us who have to rely on the grocery store? Should we still try to shop in season?
Oh,
and how
Lord,
do we
yes.
know what the season is?
Okay. Well, number one, if you see a watermelon in February, I can tell you it isn't the season. And I will give you a dirty look from across the grocery store. Just absolutely please, just don't. There is no reason to buy a melon in January. You know, and it's funny because you know what the seasons are, because you know when the vegetables taste the best. When do they look the best? Even in the grocery store, you can tell the difference in an apple that has been sitting in a warehouse for a solid year. You know, if you're eating an apple in July, I can tell you right now that apple was harvested in October year before. You know when things are in season. Sometimes we just, you know, don't think about it as much. And that has a lot to do with looking at magazines and reading. And go to your farmers markets. I mean, even, you know, the blessing is that, you know, we do have farmers markets that are popping up everywhere. And so even if you just go once a month just to look to see what's out there, and also looking in your magazines. The only problem with magazines is and food websites and things like that, it's like fashion. They're going to start talking about tomatoes a month before tomatoes are actually in the store. So you have to kind of watch that a little bit. But, I mean, you know, taste it. And I can just tell you this right now. Watermelons in the summertime, tomatoes in the summertime, not in the winter, ever.
What about those recipes that use that canned frozen?
You know, it's fine. There are going to be some recipes that you can get away with it. But for the most part, my suggestion is just wait. Just wait. Wait until it's time. And the taste is so much better that it's worth waiting for. And I'm not going to say that I don't pull through and get a hamburger somewhere that has tomatoes in the middle of the winter, because I'm just as guilty as anyone else. But I wait until tomato season to eat tomatoes. I wouldn't dare make gazpacho out of season. It just doesn't make sense because it doesn't taste as good. Butternut squash soup is right now. You know, it's just, those are the things that are most important. So sometimes, yes, I would say so, but it's fine. I'm just not going to suggest it. Sorry.
That's fine.
You can tell how upset I am about this, because it's like a corn casserole. I mean, I love a corn casserole just as much as anybody else. I like a corn casserole, you know, I mean, I would love to have one at Thanksgiving, but it's so much better at the 4th of July, you know, I mean, it just is. But, I mean, yeah, it's not the end of the world. If you want your corn casserole at Thanksgiving, it's fine. Go ahead and buy the frozen.
One of the things
frozen before
too,
canned, I will
okay,
say that.
That's what I was going to ask
okay,
you.
Frozen before canned, unless it's a tomato, and then canned always.
Okay. One of the things that you did not use in one of the recipes was canned black beans. You actually did your own.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that better?
Well, I mean, I think any time that you're seasoning it yourself, you're able to be in charge of how much salt goes in it. A lot of time canned products have a tremendous amount of sodium. And so when you start with that, then it kind of throws off the whole recipe. So this way we know exactly what our salt content is. We know what it's been seasoned with. It just tastes better. Now, if you're not going to make this recipe because you don't want to soak your beans overnight and don't want to make it, then by all means, buy the canned ones. Just give them a really good rinse before you start. But if you have the time and you want to make your own beans, go ahead. And I guess that's kind of my philosophy. If not taking a shortcut is going to send you to Kroger to get a pre-made salad off of the salad bar, then yes, buy the can. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I mean, I would rather you at least experience it in your own home. And so there are lots and lots of times that I use shortcuts.
Well, and that's the beauty of the cookbook. I mean, there are recipes that are easier than others. Mm-hmm. And they do have, you know, easy things if you want to get a little more complicated. And I really like that you showed the winter salad and the summer salad so people can kind of know mm-hmm. what would be available in the winter and what would be appropriate for summer.
Exactly.
And kind of contrast those two. How did you get people to eat root vegetables, though? Because that's a big problem. We love them at our house, but to take them someplace else, people just, you know,
isn't that funny?
Don't get
it. They're coming very much in vogue. When we first started the farm, we were growing this kale, or it was dino kale. Some people call it a Tuscan kale. And we planted a tremendous amount of it. And I would come to Memphis with it to sell it to the restaurants. And I would have crates and crates and crates. And nobody wanted it. I mean, this was 7 years ago. Nobody cared a flip about kale. I mean, I couldn't give the kale away. And so the next year, I said, Luke, let's barely plant any. Or he said, we're not going to plant much because we just didn't sell very much last year. And of course, by then, kale had become, you know, the sexy darling of the vegetable world. Everybody wanted kale, and I didn't have enough. I mean, I kept saying, where were y'all last year? You know, when
exactly.
I had crates and crates and crates of it.
Yeah, just trying to get people to try things in the winter that are in season,
mm-hmm.
like kale. We did a CSA last year, and this time of year, we got lots of greens.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of figure out what to do with them. We got things that we didn't even know what it was, you know, so we had to look it up online.
Exactly, and thank God we do have online, you know. I mean, you hate to be like that, but it does, and it does give you lots of answers. It's funny because I feel like beets are making a comeback. Lord knows the Brussels sprouts, people cannot get enough of them, you know, and that was not the case 2 years ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with different sorts of preparations, especially with something like a Brussels sprout or a beet, where we're roasting them instead of boiling them. It's a better way to prepare them.
You talk about your friend Gaydon Metcalf
mm-hmm.
and her three food groups. Talk a little bit about that, because I thought that was so funny.
She and her friend Charlotte Hayes wrote Being Dead is No Excuse, which is one of my all-time favorite books. Not only does it have amazing recipes in it, but I think Gaydon and Charlotte are two of the funniest people on the planet. And when they get together, it's just, I mean, it's just a hoot and a holler. But she talks about these fried walnuts that I use the same recipe in my book because I've adopted it. I feel like it's mine, even though it's theirs. And so they said it covers all of the food groups. So it has sugar, salt, and fat in it, which is just, I think, hilarious.
And that would go along with the kale. So if you've got, you know, one extreme to the other, get your veggies and
exactly.
You say that if it grows together, it goes together. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit about what you mean about that, because I thought that was good.
Well, it is. You know, with the farm, there's a reason. And that panzanella salad and gazpacho are two of the prime examples of that. If tomatoes are growing, then cucumbers are also growing. If cucumbers are growing, then basil's growing. If basil's growing, then mint's growing. All of those go together so beautifully, and peppers and squash. And I mean, literally, think about ratatouille. You have eggplant, you have peppers, you have tomatoes, you have basil. It's perfection. And they're all grown together at the same exact time. I know that was all planned. I know that that was a part of God's plan. I know that eating seasonally is what our bodies need and crave. The vitamins and the minerals that we need in wintertime, the vegetables that are available during that time satisfy those needs. Same thing with summer. Our bodies need different things depending on the climate and the weather. So whatever's growing around us, that's what we need to be eating in order to stay healthy. This was all taken care of. This is not just an accident. It really does make that much of a difference.
So if you're looking at this time of year and you're looking at root vegetables, then you need to look with others that go along with it, like you would put beets with kale and those kind of things.
Exactly. Your spinach, your lettuces, your kale, your arugula, parsnips, carrots, rutabagas, turnips, butternut squash, you know, all of these things, acorn squash. That's what's in the field right now.
How do you decide what you're going to plant from year to year? You have a large farm, right?
Yes. The great news is that Luke and I, when we first started, it was really just the two of us and the Sharps who actually own the farm. And now that the farm has grown so much, we have an amazing farm manager is there, and he makes all of these decisions. And I've really moved more back into the kitchen, which is where I need to be, writing books and going to the Today Show and, you know, once every 2 or 3 weeks at a time. So I've kind of moved out of that. We certainly still use all the vegetables from the farm, but I don't have to make those decisions any longer.
What is it like to be on the Today Show? You mentioned that.
It is just a dream. It's a total dream come true. There's nothing like it in the world. They are just the nicest people, and they take care of everything for you, and they just treat you like a queen, and it's just, it's a wonderful experience.
How did they find you?
It's so funny. When Jency and I had Instead of Flowers, we would I don't know how much work we honestly did when I really look back at it, because we did a whole lot of TV watching. But anyway, we were watching the Today Show, and Martha Stewart was on, and she was doing her turkey. And I told Jency, this was 17 years ago, I told Jency that I was going to be on the Today Show with Matt Lauer, and he needed to know about my turkey. It's my grandmother's pillowcase turkey recipe. And I said, he would just love it. I know he would love it. And so for 17 years, I thought about it, you know, kind of on and off. And then when I went to Viking, I had a friend that worked there, and she was on Good Morning America, Martha Foose, who has Screen Doors and Sweet Tea. Anyway, so she was on Good Morning America. And I thought, well, you know, if she can be on Good Morning America, then I can be on the Today Show. And so I started, you know, really thinking about it and really focusing on it. And I would, you know, watch them in the morning sometimes, and I would say, hey, coworkers, and, you know, good morning, guys, I'll be there soon. And then, you know, my children were dying to go to New York, and I would say, well, that's fine. When I get on the Today Show, we'll go. You know, we'll all go. And then I would have friends that were, you know, couples that were taking a couples trip to New York, and I was desperate for Luke to, you know, to go. And he would say, no, because he is not big on big cities or anything like that. And so he said, no, I tell you what, I'll go when you get on the Today Show, which, of course, he thought I'd never get on. Anyway, so I was invited to cook dinner for a group of 12 people at Roanoke, William Faulkner's home, in his kitchen. I'm one of the only people that's ever been allowed to cook in his kitchen since his death. Anyway, so it was just a really amazing meal, and Andy Lack was happened to be one of the people at the dinner. So Andy Lack was head of NBC 20 years ago because he hired Matt Lauer. Matt's been there 20 years. And then he retired. So he was coming back. This was on a Thursday. He was taken back over of NBC on Monday. I mean, honey, we just put the dog on. I mean, you have never in your life. I mean, there was every piece of silver that we have ever owned. I mean, we brought in the table that was in there wasn't big enough. I brought my own dining room table in. I mean, wow. It was quite an effort to impress Andy Lack. at the end of it, he held my hands and he looked at me because they were doing a bunch of photography. It was actually the day that Dan Jones had resigned from the university after a long fight. So it was a very emotional dinner. And Andy is very good friends with Dan and his wife and a few other key people from the university. And so they were taking photographs. At the end of it, he held my hands and he said, "You need to understand that you are wildly talented." And I said, "Oh, Andy," I said, "you tell all the girls that." And he said, "No," he said, "I don't." He said, "I've eaten everywhere. I've been everywhere. And you are extremely talented." And I said, "Ah, I am so glad to hear it, because for 17 years, I have wanted to be on the Today Show with Matt Lauer. And so, look, I know that on Monday, you've got a few things to do." This was right after the whole Brian Williams debacle and all that. And I said, "So now I know that whole Brian Williams thing is probably going to take you a few days to straighten out. You got to unpack your desk and put your pencils on top of it, you know, and put that little name tag outside your door. You got a lot of stuff to do." I said, "But as soon as you get all that done, I'm going to need for you to get on the phone with Matt Lauer and get me on that show." I didn't hear anything from him for about, I guess it was about 2.5 months. And so that just did not sit well with me. So I sent him my Bloody Mary mix, which is my Debutante Farmer Bloody Mary mix, and pimento cheese and cheese straws, and then this little notepad. And on the outside, it said what to do today. And so then on the inside, on the first line, or I wrote the first line, and I said, "Call Matt Lauer and put Elizabeth High School on the Today Show." And then number two was, "Write Elizabeth High School's name on the back of your hand in Sharpie in case you forget about Elizabeth High School by the time you get to work." And then number three, like, it went through 10 things that he had to do. I still cannot believe that I did it. It's funny. I don't realize how important people are, you know, I mean, especially when they're not in their own environment.
Right.
And he's such a nice man. Anyway, and I guess he was probably so taken aback, you know, that he had to call the Today Show at this point, because I think he thought at that point that I was certifiable and that I was not going to leave him alone until this happened. So then I got a call from Debbie Kozowski, who is the senior producer of the Today Show. And again, you know, I'm running my mouth talking nonstop because I'm so excited to talk to her. And I was driving to Nashville because we were about to start selling vegetables there. And so I had my Suburban was loaded with tomatoes. I mean, just top to bottom tomatoes. And we talked for 2 hours. I cannot believe I cannot believe I kept that woman on the phone for 2.5 hours. But anyway, and so at the end of the conversation, she said, "Oh my God, I still cannot believe, knowing Debbie and knowing how important she is and knowing now how busy she is, the fact that she sat on that phone with me for 2 hours." But anyway, at the end of it, she said, "You know what I really want to do? I'm going to send a correspondent down to you, and I want to do a story on you and the farm." And so I said, okay, you know, and I didn't really say much. And she said, "Well, is that all right?" And I said, "Oh, yes." I said, "Yes, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine." She said, "Elizabeth, you sound disappointed." She said, "Do you understand what people would do to have the Today Show come to them?" And I said, "Oh, my Lord, Debbie, I'm so grateful." I said, it's just, and she goes, "I know, Elizabeth, everybody up here knows the dream. 17 years you've wanted to be on the Today Show." She said, "If you will just let us come to Mississippi, I promise you we will put you on the Today Show." And I said, "Okay, that's fine. Y'all can come to Mississippi as long as I get to come to New York." And so then finally they came down, they did the segment. It was a really beautiful segment that was it's actually nominated for a James Beard Award.
Wow.
Which I was thrilled to find out. And then she called me. I'll never forget. I was on my way to the Auburn game. We were in the van headed to the stadium. Anyway, she called and she said, "Elizabeth, we want you to come on the week before Thanksgiving and we want you to do the Thanksgiving turkey."
Wow, that's a big deal.
17 years later, I'd never said anything about the turkey. I'd never even mentioned the pillowcase turkey. And I said, "Oh, my Lord." I said, "Did you hear about my pillowcase turkey or my grandmother's pillowcase turkey?" And she said, "No, I didn't." She said, "But I have now." She said, "That's what we want you to do." So anyway, so that was it. So 17 years later, after deciding that that was something that I was just bound, damned, and determined to do, it actually happened.
But that just goes to prove that whatever you put your mind to, if you work hard, you can do it.
It's pretty
amazing.
And that's
what you've done.
It's pretty amazing. And it's funny because it seems like I'm constantly putting myself in positions and in places where I'm tested and where sometimes the dreams seem too big. And then I have to go back and remember that. I mean, there's no reason in the world sitting in Oxford, Mississippi, that I should be the Today Show food contributor. There's absolutely no reason in the world that I should have this position. None. And it is, you know, I mean, it's all God, but it's also intention, and it's me, you know, putting it out there and focusing on it and working really, really, really hard. And it's also the same thing to my girls. I mean, it's interesting to watch them because they don't have a chance. You know, they don't stand a chance with saying, well, I can't do that, or that's too hard, or this, you know, because
you've proven.
Yeah. And it's pretty funny, though, because my oldest daughter is at college, and the first weekend they kept them very, very busy, you know, with all of these speakers and just all of these activities and things to do. And so she called me and I said, well, wait, I thought y'all were supposed to have, you know, another speaker tonight. Why didn't you go? And she said, oh, Mom, she said it was a motivational speaker. And I said, well, you should have gone to that. And she goes, what are you talking about? I live with a motivational speaker. So
that's your next thing.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you're passionate about what you do.
I do love it.
You put your whole into it. That's very obvious.
I do love it, I have to say.
But now I have to know about the pillowcase turkey, because it's not in here.
No,
That's not for the next book? Or is that,
we got to save something for the next book.
Okay. Just checking to make sure that I wasn't missing something.
No, it is great. And you can go to todayshow.com and watch it. But it's my grandmother. You know, being in the Delta, you couldn't just run to Williams-Sonoma and grab cheesecloth, you know, to wrap your turkey. And she's also a perfectionist. And so she couldn't stand that the outside would get so done and so brown before the inside was actually finished. And so she would wrap the whole turkey in a pillowcase and then saturate it with wine or with sherry and then continue to baste it with that wine, sherry, butter mixture the entire time. And so what it does is it's just like, you know, it completely seals in that turkey and steams it almost with all of those wonderful juices. It's amazing. And then she would flip the bird, unwrap it, flip it, and then put it back in, and then it would be gorgeous, beautiful brown.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best turkeys you've ever had. It's the first article that I ever had for Southern Living was that turkey. And out of 10,000 recipes that they tested that year, it landed in the top 10.
That's great.
Isn't that great? I mean, that's a turkey. It's not like it was a Twinkie cake, you know?
People also have trouble with yeast. I noticed that with your cinnamon rolls, you do have yeast, but you also have vanilla pudding.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work together?
Don't even ask me anything about that recipe. It just works. And I wish I knew why, and I don't.
That's okay. You don't have to know chemistry.
But it works. I mean, it works beautifully. You know, and I've seen recipes that are very similar to this one that obviously don't have the vanilla pudding. It just adds a silkiness to this cinnamon roll. That really is one of the best cinnamon rolls that you will ever put in your mouth.
Well, my husband, that's one of the ones he keyed in on, because that's one of his favorites. So I know we'll be trying that one.
Really is a great recipe. It takes a little bit of time, but it's wonderful.
Why are people afraid of yeast, though? Because I was showing that recipe at the beach and they said, oh, it's got yeast. I don't make anything that has yeast.
I think that's it. You just never tried it. And it's not difficult, you know? I mean, it's just, you follow the directions just like anything else. It's no more difficult than freezing ice, you know? I mean, it's a process. And as long as you follow the directions, it's perfectly fine. I think it's rather fun, honestly. It is kind of like you don't have to be a chemist. It is. It's almost like magic. It's like it is science, but it's science that you can eat. And I think that's pretty fantastic.
It sounds like you're kind of a natural cook, and it sounds like some of that came from your Lucy Mae Brown.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, who is she in your life?
So Lucy helped Mama and Daddy raise us. Lucy worked for my mother and helped raise her. And then my older brother had congenital heart defects. He had to have someone with him pretty much 24 hours a day for the first 2 years of his life. So Lucy came and lived with us. Well, I wasn't born yet, but came and lived with my mother and William and Daddy. And so I got the benefit from, you know, having her there as well. And she was, without a doubt, one of the finest cooks that I have ever had the pleasure of being around. And I wish that I had known, because she died when I was probably 12 years old, 13. I mean, I appreciated her. I mean, I knew that her, I mean, her hotcakes, everything that she made, her rolls, her hotcakes, those orange muffins and the orange sweet rolls. And I mean, she could do anything. Her meringue pies were the most beautiful meringue pies you've ever seen. And she loved to have a party. I mean, she loved to have a party more than I did, more than Mama did. I mean, she was constantly looking for an excuse to have a party. And, you know, a lot of that was so that she could show off her culinary skills, you know, and she was famous. And I can remember Mama getting so upset one day because one of her friends had hired her to come and basically cater at her house and had not talked to Mama about it.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, I mean, she wanted Lucy to make the money. But anyway, it was just really, really funny. I still remember Mama being so upset. Like Lucy was cheating on her, you know?
People are funny about things like that.
I know. Especially when you have someone that's that talented. But anyway, no, Lucy was the best, and she would do anything for us. She spoiled us absolutely rotten. Oh, it was horrible. We were rotten, rotten, rotten. She would stop any second of the day if all we had to do is just say, Lucy, I'm just so hungry. I just really wish you'd make me some hotcakes. I mean, it could be 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and she would be in there making homemade hotcakes, you know. Anyway, she was the best.
My mother's specialty was grilled cheese and Kraft macaroni and cheese. So I don't think we had the same experiences growing up.
I'm sorry you didn't know Lucy. She was pretty fantastic.
Okay, so you had the dream for 17 years. Now you've done it. Mm-hmm. You've written your first book. Mm-hmm. What's next?
I am working on my next book. It's a revamp of the Southern Living Parties Cookbook, which was written in 1973, and it was their most popular book that they've ever done. It sold more copies than anything that Southern Living has done. Anyway, we are rewriting that right now, so that's set to come out this time next year. So that'll be really exciting. You know, we'll just kind of see where all of the television goes. We've got some exciting irons in the fire right now. We'll just kind of see how all that plays out. But I have a lot of big dreams, and some of them I've even been focused on longer and harder than the Today Show. So I'm real curious to see if those are going to come around as well.
Well, knowing how passionate you are, I can imagine that they will.
I need my own radio show as much as I can talk.
But aren't you on Sirius already?
I am on Sirius Radio. Okay. Yes, I am on Sirius Radio. And it's funny because that's one of my things that I would really love because, you know, I heard that, oh, Lord, what is his name? Brett Favre. He does his radio show from his pajamas in his bed. And when I heard that, I decided that this was probably a gig that I needed.
So if Luke called the instead of a job, what's he going to call that?
I can't even imagine.
Instead of getting up.
Exactly.
Well, we do wish you the best, and I appreciate you taking your time to talk with us today. Good luck with this book. I think it's a wonderful one. I think it'll be very successful. Everybody that was with me last week, there were 8 of us, and 6 of us are good cooks. So it was really well received.
Oh, that makes my day. You have no idea how much fun it's been here talking to you. It's so exciting to come and sit with you for this time. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you. We've reached the end of our time for today's book talk. I've been speaking with Elizabeth Heiskell, the author of What Can I Bring? Southern Food for Any Occasion Life Serves Up. The book is not only the source for delicious Southern recipes, but includes stories, tips, and stunning location photos, making it at home on the coffee table as well as in the kitchen. The book is published by Oxmoor House. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.